This morning, I'd like to talk about a very simple, short case that comes from the collection called Entangling Vines, and it also is part of the Gateless Gate. It's case number 3 in Entangling Vines, and it goes like this. Gu Tzu Fayan of Mount Dong said to the assembly, "Even Shakyamuni and Maitreya are merely someone's servants. Tell me, who is it?" So a couple of things about this koan and the people who are mentioned in it. It's important when we listen to talks about koans that we don't start to speculate too much about the meaning of the koan, but instead to let the words enter our hearts, if they do, and maybe our bodies, and watch how the mind might grab onto them and start trying to figure things out. In this koan, this master Wu Tzu was a master who is the ancestor, the direct ancestor of all Rinzai teachers who are currently alive. His student, Yuan Wu, compiled the Blue Cliff Record, and everyone descends from Yuan Wu. All the other lines died out. Wu Tzu is the subject of a number of other koans where he usually asks puzzling questions like this one that are intended to point us to the condition of our own lives. In this case, he talks about Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya Buddha. And most of us know who Shakyamuni Buddha is. He was the Buddha of this current age, the man who was supposedly born 2,600 years ago and who gave us this this form of practice that we call Buddhist practice, or the practice of awakening, if we're going to translate the word Buddha accurately. Awakening to our true nature, someone who decided at some point in his life that everything he'd been taught, everything that he'd ever encountered about life, somehow or other didn't serve him, didn't allow him to find the truth of reality. And so he devoted himself to discovering through the practice of sitting, just like we're sitting this morning, sitting still, sitting awake, sitting quietly, sitting with presence. In the same way, he discovered what we sometimes refer to as the truth of the world, the truth of reality. And he was a regular person who was born and died. According to the legends of Buddhism, and there's a lot of legendary material, kind of material that's almost like mythological or like a fairy tale. There are other Buddhas. There are Buddhas who preceded Shakyamuni Buddha, the ancient Buddhas, who lived so many years ago that we can't even count the number of years. And in the future, when this present age is over, if we believe the Mayans, that'll be this year. So maybe this will be an interesting year for us. There was a great cartoon that I came across in the New Yorker of a Mayan who was carving the wheel that supposedly ends in 2012. And somebody standing next to him says, "I noticed that this ends in 2012. And the guy said, "Yeah, I just ran out of space." So not to worry. But sometime in the distant future, according to the mythology, there's going to be a new Buddha who arises, and this guy's name is Maitreya. And right now, he lives up in the Tushita heaven, the place where Maitreya has his realm, we say. And he's usually depicted in a very interesting posture, not in a posture of meditation, but in a posture of waiting. He's got his hand on his face and his elbow on his knee, and he's got one foot on the ground and the other foot folded under him, and he's looking down. He's waiting. He's waiting for this age to end and for him to appear as a human being on the earth to be the new Buddha. So when Wutsu mentions Shakyamuni and Maitreya, he's talking about different forms of awakened nature, the form of the awakened nature of the past, the form of the awakened nature of the future. And in this form, this is where we get caught. We human beings love to think about the past and love to think about the future. We don't always do this with happiness. We often think about the past with regret and the future with anxiety. Some of us are lucky enough to think of the past with happiness and the future with anticipation. And of course, both of these ways of thinking come and go. But Zen practice is not about moving into the past with either regret or pleasure, or moving into the future with either anticipation or anxiety. It's, of course, about being here. I was talking to somebody the other day who said that one of his Zen teachers had once held up his stick and balanced it on his finger so that it balanced perfectly with one end and the other end not moving, and his finger the fulcrum of this stick. And this teacher said to this man I was talking to, "This is the world exactly as it appears to awaken nature. The past is on one end of the stick and the future is on the other end of the stick. And the present moment is this finger. Everything goes in and out of balance. We keep tilting in one direction or the other. But ultimately we have to find the balance point. And this balance point is right here." When Wu Min, who was a contemporary of Yuan Wu, the collector of the Blue Cliff Record, and of course of Yuan Wu's teacher Wu Tzu, who gave us this koan question, when he collected this in his own collection, The Gateless Gate, the Wu Min Guan, he appended a poem and a commentary to the case, which is missing from Entangling Vines. In Entangling Vines, we just get the cases themselves. And the commentary is interesting to me on a couple of levels. It's a very short commentary from Wu Min. He says, "If you clearly recognize that one, it will be just like meeting your father at the crossroads. It's not necessary to ask others whether it is he or not." This is a great example of Wu Min's teaching because it's very down to earth. He's someone who probably, like most of us, has had the experience of having parents. And in this way of having parents, there's something that happens. If we're lucky, we outlive them. They disappear from our lives. They become like Shakyamuni Buddha, someone from the past who we no longer are in touch with in the present moment. For some of us, our parents are still alive, and we get to see them and talk to them on the phone and maybe Skype with them. But for a number of us, we've lost our parents. They've died. And they only appear as, we might say, mythological creatures. They appear in our dreams, in our fantasies, in our minds. My own father died when I was 15 years old, many, many years ago, 45 years ago now. And still, I dream about him. He appears to me in moments. Sometimes I see flickers of him in my daughter's face. He is, we might say in the conventional sense, dead, but in another sense, he's very much alive in me. There are even times when I hear myself saying things that he said. Sometimes I say these things and feel a regret about sounding like my father. Other times I feel a kind of a warm sense of pleasure, the aliveness of this person who is no longer embodied, but is present in my own heart and even in my cells. He's given me all kinds of inheritances, health problems, humor, a certain way of seeing things clearly that I really value. All of these inheritances, just like all of us sitting here with the inheritances of Shakyamuni. And of course, if I was walking down Pleasant Street and ran into him, I would know him immediately. There would be no hesitation. I would probably be very surprised, but I would know him immediately, even though as years go on, it's sometimes hard to imagine the face of loved ones who are gone. Still, we see a photograph, we have a dream, we know immediately. There's absolutely no hesitation. So what Wutsu is pointing to in this koan is the recognition of something, the recognition of that fulcrum, that balance point, the moment when everything that has happened in the past, everything that will happen in the future, arrives right here, right now, at our doorsteps. It's possible for this to happen. It doesn't mean, and this is something that is quite confusing, in certainly in the way Buddhism has been expressed in the West in the last few decades. Sometimes there's a simplification pointing to being in the present moment as if it was a very teeny tiny point in time. But we know as we sit with the yearning for awakening, as we sit and have the world revealed to us in so many different ways, in our own fantasies and dreams, in the quality of feet touching the floor in walking meditation, in the smells and the sounds of this day in early spring. All of these experiences are not small. They're not tiny little points that we might say is just this moment, but they're everything. Every time we actually feel the fulcrum and feel the balance point, we are alive to everything that's ever happened, everything that will happen in the past, in the future, all of it coming to this moment. Our loved ones who have died, the people we will meet in the future, the Buddha of the past, the Buddha of the future. Everything is arriving here now, and it's enormous. It's huge. It's not tiny. It encompasses everything. When we have the experience of awakening, maybe just a little hiccup of it, or maybe some huge experience, in that moment, everything drops away, including ideas that the past is some other place and the future is some other place. Everything arrives here now. And in that balance place, in that fulcrum place, we get to live our lives fully. This is what Wutsu is pointing us towards. It's what Wumen is pointing us towards. We meet this present moment and we know it, just like we say that we know when we drink water, whether it's cold or warm. This is a personal experience that is intrapersonal, that is, it transcends who we think we are in some narrow sense. So who are Shakyamuni and Maitreya serving? The whole world is serving this moment. Everything is here for us. Wutsu Fayan of Mount Dong said to the assembly, "Even Shakyamuni and Maitreya are merely someone's servants. Tell me, who is it?" Thank you. And please make yourselves comfortable. We'll have a few moments for Dharma dialogue, where we can come forward and ask questions, make comments, and engage with each other out of the silence. So we'll just, should we say our names? No, we don't need to say our names.
It seemed like such a lovely koan for spring, because, you know, everything just coming alive. It's so noticeable. This week was so beautiful, the weather and the flowers, and then here we have this koan calling us to pay attention.
Yeah.
So, thank you. It's very nice.
Thank you. That's a great connection. I was thinking, you know, the flowers are blooming so quickly, and to think of them as our servants. Mm-hmm. It's really lovely. The servants of this moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just an observation, but I got a new pair of glasses yesterday, and it's amazing when you get new glasses, all of a sudden you can see. The old ones were pretty badly scratched up. Sometimes sitting is the same way.
Thank you.
Her memory, her experience of the past is so radically different from my own. And holding that space, holding that dissonance is really hard. I was wondering if you might speak to that point. Different pasts crashing into each other in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Uchiyama Roshi talks about different models we have of the world, and one model he talks about is that the world appears to be some place that we all sort of enter from the wings when we're born, and we do our thing, and then we, you know, go off stage right. He says, when we actually look at our experience of the world, we actually don't live in the same world with anyone else. Of course we do, but in some way, when each human being is born, the whole universe is born. Of course it's both. Of course there is a consensual reality, but I think you're pointing to this, the unreliability of eyewitnesses, and the fact that we're always seeing what's happening from some perspective. there's no way to see the whole thing. It's much more chaotic and wild than we imagine. And how to appreciate the different perspectives and not to have to abandon our own. This is not about saying, oh, nothing happened, or forget what happened. There's something for each of us that our story and our meanings of that are incredibly rich and part of our unfolding karma. But also important that we don't have to perfectly track, don't have to imagine that there was one thing that happened. So much happening now. And these realities, as Melissa was saying, coming into this moment. So the past you had together, your mother's perception of the past, your perception of the past, it's all part of the aliveness of this moment. And I think you're pointing to how do we let that be, not have to hold our flag up and claim the territory, but maybe claim being together in the wonder of so much has happened that's here.
There was a psychology experiment that some of you are probably familiar with, where a psychology professor was lecturing to 100 students in an amphitheater, and he had arranged for a man to run through during his lecture who was naked. And then afterwards, he had everybody, all the kids, took out a paper and wrote down what they thought they saw, and there were 100 different answers. So I think this is just underlining David's point, but that pull to believe other people's version of reality is really strong in some of us. And having faith in your own perception is important, but hard. Thanks.
It's interesting. It almost sounds like my family history listening to you. I also found that conversation with my mother that we have major differences about what happened in the past, and I'm sure I've probably done this too. But what I noticed about some of the episodes was that my mother rewrote the episode very subtly so that she came out looking better. And I'm sure I've done that too.
I think we all do that.
I said, "Oh, that's interesting," and I didn't say it. Didn't argue with her because, you know, that's the point, but it was very interesting.
Yeah. That's a good point, too, the not arguing.
Yeah. So, thank you all for being here. Your talk gives me question. Who's serving who? What is serving?
Exactly, yeah. That's why it's a koan. One of the things in giving talks about koans is we don't reveal the, in quotes, answer to the koan. But you're pointing to something that Wu Tzu was really pointing to. Very important. Who are you, anyway? And who is serving who? And what's the difference? He's also the guy who tells the story of Sei and her soul being separated. Some of you know that that story, the koan, about the woman sleeping and the woman coming up from the riverbank joining together, and which is the true Sei. So he had something, some burning question probably himself, that's very much like yours. And yeah, you want to stay with it until it reveals itself. And if it's already revealed itself, keep going with it. Yeah, thank you.
She's having such a relevant story. Not about that, but before the parrot thing. I went and visited my...
It might be about that.
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah. I went and visited my mother, who has Alzheimer's, and mm-hmm. So she is losing her memory, or she's pretty much lost it almost entirely. But we walked out of her room, and she ran into a nurse and said, "This is my son." And the nurse said, "Oh my gosh, you remember," because they, you know, she can't remember people when she sees them anymore. So she said, "Yes, this is my son." And then the nurse said, "Oh, what's his name?" Of course, asking too much. And my mother looked over at me with all this wonder in her eyes, and she said, and she took my face in her hands, and she said, "I don't know your name. I should know your name." But the thing was how, like, in her eyes filled with tears, and so did mine, we just looked at each other, and it was like, we totally saw each other, even though we didn't know each other's names at that point. It didn't matter. I mean, but it did.
Yeah.
It did. It was very sad and poignant, but it was also, I really felt like she was totally seeing me. Maybe more.
What a beautiful story. And it actually is quite relevant to this question. Yeah.
But, and also, to me, Alzheimer's is so painful and difficult in some way, but yet we're all so caught up in our own minds in some way, in those moments between all of us when we can actually see our children, see our parents, see our friends, you know, through the haze of all the stories we make up that defend, you know, I'm just slightly above average, you know, and all my stories vindicate, you know, not such a bad guy, you know. But I think our aim in Zen is that moment where we can meet each other with names and without names, and it's a rare occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess what I hear saying too is this: it's less about the story than about our relationship to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the capacity to, we all tell stories about ourselves and about life continuously, like you've said over and again with storytelling creatures, and the way that I've worked with it is the relationship of compassion for this process that I do endlessly, and for the process that I do, that others do endlessly, and how to use that to connect, both with, have more compassion for myself and for the other person. And that always is possible, I think, no matter what the story that I tell or anyone else tells, that there's good connection is ever present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah. Just, I'm sorry, I don't know this gentleman's name, but David, when you responded to him, and of course, everything you said is completely true. And we are not only living in separate worlds, but we are actively creating these worlds. We're writing novels. And whether the novels put us in a better light, you know, than someone else's novels, that's what makes it fact useful to have a lot of novels floating about to keep us from just being, you know, missing a lot of important stuff. However, on the other, I just want to say that sometimes, this is my own novel reading into it, one is confronted with someone who has created a novel, and the feeling that I have, or it could be the novel of that the Jews killed Christ and deserve everything they got as a result, but that the results of that novel, it may be that when this gentleman says he feels the gap between his mother's reality and his own, that there's something about that novel that feels maybe so resulted in so much destruction that it's very hard to just live and go, oh, okay, fine, that's my novel, that's your novel. So there's, in a sense, there's part of you has to do that, just do that, do exactly that. And then there's another part where you have to find some way to immunize yourself and protect yourself and heal yourself and stay centered despite that novel, and know that the destruction and the things that might have been caused were not just that person's fault of that novel, but maybe many, many other things as well. And then there's a final piece of also maybe finding something in even in the ashes of that that can be made useful, maybe shed light on something, some grain of truth, something that's not all false. If there's something grain of truth that may point to something that you find out about yourself that corrects or opens up something. So it's the both. You have to heal yourself and protect yourself from it, and just accept the duality, reality that this is this and this is this. And then there's the other piece of there may be something that can be teased out or mined from it, as different or as repugnant as it may seem, or as horrible or destructive as it may seem, that may be able to be a seed that can be planted in another place. Then of course it will.
Yeah, I think well said, Nat. Thank you. It's not so important that it doesn't become a formula, and this possibility to that something new may grow in the space and in being together.
And I think to recognize, I mean, to go back to what both Ray and Bob were saying, that everybody is really working hard to create some story where we're the center of the narrative, and to approach that story making with kindness and compassion, knowing that, and to really to be suspicious that everything is a construction. So when two constructions collide, you could get caught in making one true and the other not true. But to know that they all, as you say, have little germs of truth, and that none of them are the whole story, is really important. And to realize that everybody just shows up a little bit better in their own story than everybody else.
Well, you know, actually, I was thinking about that. Sometimes that's not true. Because we do other kinds of stories where we are the worst, mm-hmm. and we are clearly some kind of deficient version of a human being. You know, we do that
in
too.
My story, everybody's always a little better. So this is the way it works. It's just perfect.
But not so that you can't catch up.
What?
But not so much that you can't catch up.
If you work hard. Everybody's better, but if you work really hard, you can catch up.
Oh, you could catch up. Right, right. Yes, indeed. So, with that.